I like music that I understand the lyrics to, and therefore you appreciate the poetry, if you like, of what the performer, the artist is trying to actually say. It's been really, really bumpy. It's been unpleasant. And as I say, I'm really pleased that Rishi Sunak is now there.
Hello and welcome to Pop and Politics, the podcast where we delve into the musical scene with politicians. I'm the pop fanatic, Alex Charles.
And I'm the politics specialist, Isaac Marley. Do love a bit of Sean Paul myself, though.
Sean Paul, I thought it was Dua Lipa last week. It's taken a very interesting
turn. It changes every time, my friend.
Taken a very interesting turn.
It changes every week, my friend.
So for the next sort of 20 minutes to half an hour, get ready to immerse yourself into the world of pop and politics.
And today we have the Conservative MP for Bournemouth East. It is Tobias Elwood, and he joins us today on Pop and Politics. Hi, Tobias. Welcome along to the podcast.
Delighted to be here. I mean, amazed that anybody really wants to listen to any of my politics. As for pop, we really are on a limb here. So I'm looking forward to this. As long as there's no karaoke involved, I'm really very much looking forward to this. So thank you for having me.
When you were growing up, what music were you sort of brought up on? What music were you listening to around the house? What music sort of soundtracked your sort of youth years growing up?
Well, it's important to understand where I was, because I was born in New York. I was at an international school, surrounded by people from different parts of the world. But one of my closest friends was actually from the States as well. And he introduced me to Styx, to AC/DC, to Van Halen, to Led Zeppelin, you know, all these rock greats that were doing so wonderful. So, and I remember actually at the, you know, school discos, you know, jumping up and down to all this great rock music, but also waiting for the slow dance where you could go up to the, you know, rather shyly to the girls. So Stairway to Heaven, remember that one from Led Zeppelin, where you could, you know, dance in a very awkward way with your arms, you know, it's crazy memories.
I'm not sure about that one. I might have to try that one. Slow dancing to Stairway to Heaven.
Indeed, when I was growing up itself, we weren't allowed to listen to Radio 1. My parents didn't like the noise that came out of it. And when we were very young, and I remember with my brother, when we were like 7 or 8, he had a radio, and we'd listen to it under the sheets, but really, really quiet. So we were allowed to listen to this corruptive music, I guess. I think our parents were quite strict from that perspective. Moved from there back to the UK. And then at about the age of 9, when I was just starting to become aware of music around me, I then was moved to Vienna with my family. My father worked at the United Nations, and therefore completely exposed perhaps to, you know, a different genre, a different type of music. All the biggies were there, so it was fantastic. Vienna is a very small city, a fantastic place, full of culture. So absolute exposure to all the classics, you know, Mozart and so forth, Bach, Haydn, and the lot. But we had the big bands come through, and we were able to get tickets. So at a young age, I was able to go see Queen and Elton John and so forth. Absolutely amazing to then be there in the Stadthalle, the city hall there, to be able to watch these bands absolutely come through. The best one that I remember, actually, is a group called Falco, which you may not know. It's an Austrian band, but they did a great song that you might recall called Rock Me Amadeus. And it really did. I remember it was a live concert, free concert, in front of the city hall, the Rathaus as it's called, and great memories of with all my friends there, staying up until, you know, quite young age, but staying up way past 11 o'clock. And the mayor of Vienna, because they did so many Zugabes, they did so many encores, because everybody loved them, the mayor of Vienna said, we're going to keep the underground open to let everybody get home. And it was this wonderful family atmosphere. I can't imagine that happening here in London, but wonderful growing up in Vienna, exposed to all the 80s music, but all the biggies as well. When we moved to Vienna, and I was, you know, in my teens, absolutely was joining in and all the great stuff. Duran Duran was a big one. 99 Luftballons, remember that one? 99 Red Balloons from Nena, that was a local one. Simple Minds, Dire Straits, Police. The Safety Dance. Do you remember The Safety Dance? Who did that one? Men Without Hats, I think it was. Or there were some great songs that came out during that era. And we have a school reunion that we go back to. We went to an 80s nightclub, and it was just amazing the outpouring of emotions you had that you associate memories with songs themselves. It's very, very powerful how the mind works in that sense.
I think on that point that you just said, associating songs with memories, for me, there's two songs that instantly just bring me back to two very different places. So there's one called Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel. And it was my late granddad's favourite song. And for me, that song just always brings me back to watching cricket with my granddad and just all the good memories. And the second one it's Arsenal FC's walkout anthem. Because football is such a massive part of my life, anytime I hear that song, it just really brightens my day. I think it's the same as any Liverpool fan that would hear, like, You'll Never Walk Alone. It's just songs that just trigger really good memories. Pre-teens, sort of pre-politics, what sort of music were you listening to in that period? Sort of the period where everyone's either getting ready to go to uni or you're just leaving school. What sort of music were you listening to at this point? Sort of post leaving school, pre sort of going to college, university, in that sort of weird gap where everyone's sort of trying to figure out what it is they're going to do?
Yeah, I think it still remained very much the very middle of the road stuff. I think I like music that I can listen, that I understand the lyrics to, and therefore you appreciate the poetry, if you like, of what the performer, the artist is trying to actually say. But also I love motivational ones that really want to get you moving. I mean, going back a bit further, Babushka by Kate Bush. I mean, you can't sit still with that one. It just wants to, you know, get you out of your seat and really get you moving. After university, I joined the army, and then I was exposed to all the military music that you get as well. I was in the Royal Green Jackets, and they have a fantastic regimental band, and they do some brilliant, you know, regimental marches and so forth. But when they do their events, they also break away. And then I remember one in front of the Sounding of the Retreat, actually, just around the corner from here. And they did Zorba the Greek, you know, the one that builds up and goes faster and faster and faster and faster. Absolutely fantastic. So wonderful to expand my sort of musical understanding and interest into new spheres.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that you were a part of the military in that teenage era. And was your time in the military a spur for you to become a government minister in the area of defence where you are now currently?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I was based in a number of places in the army, and some of our taskings were absolutely spot on. I knew why I was going, you know, to Iraq. I knew why I was going to Cyprus. But there were a couple of postings I did, and I thought, what on earth are we doing here? And that's what made me look at some of the decision-making. You know, you can't complain if you don't sort of step forward and want to participate in the decision-making process yourself. I had no experience, no connections with any party whatsoever. So I became a parish councillor, then a borough councillor, stood in a seat that I had no chance of winning in Worsley in Lancashire, and then was very fortunate to get selected in Bournemouth East, where I represent now.
Obviously, now you're with the Conservative Party, and what was it about the Conservative Party at the time that made you want to join and say, yes, I'm now a full member?
So, again, a really good question, because you can look at the Conservative Party, and it is a broad church. In fact, all parties are. You know, they cover a myriad of views. But this idea of individual responsibility and opportunity is something which is at the core. I'm a One Nation Conservative. I believe that everybody should be given the best chances as possible, and those who can't should be supported. I mean, I grew up during Margaret Thatcher, and you know, she was a big beast. Now, lots of people have views on her, but she had allowed strong people from all wings of the party. So you're too young to remember this, I can tell, but you know, you had Ken Clark and Michael Heseltine from the left of the party part of her government, and you also had Norman Lamont and Nigel Lawson from the right of the party, also part of her government. She was willing to hear people that disagreed with her. And I'm afraid in today's day and age, it's easier to get promoted if you just keep quiet, support the boss, and say something smart, and you'll become a minister. I simplify. There are some great experts in my party and indeed in Parliament. But I'm afraid this political intuition, if you like, has disappeared a little bit. To be inquisitive about what we're doing, dare to stand up to your own party, to question what's going on a little bit, but without being, you know, completely disloyal. Politics has also got a little bit angry as well. You know, I not only disagree with you, I don't like you either, and I'm going to, you know, knock you off my Facebook page and cut you out. And that's not great for British politics.
Absolutely. I mean, personally, for me, in the last couple of days, I've recently realised that with the kind of politics that I've been sharing recently, it's kind of ruffled a few feathers to the point where I go onto my Twitter page and then I suddenly see, oh, I've been blocked by this person. Hang on a second. As you say, it is now divisive to a point where people feel personally affected by it. And of course, it is a very divisive area of politics now. What I find very interesting as well, Tobias, is that you talk a lot about that era of politics, the Thatcherite era of politics, where you had those big names in government at the time as well. And you talk very passionately about that time. Would you say that with the current Sunak era of the Conservative Party, that passion's fizzled out?
In a way, no. I think it's starting to return a little bit. I mean, politics, I'll be honest with you, has been miserable for the last two or three years. It's actually been pretty miserable since Brexit. I mean, that polarised the country. It's polarised parties as well. And the last couple of prime ministers played on this, actually, going back to the anger, played on people's emotions to say how bad Brussels is. And that isn't the British way of doing things. Of course, we can have our difference of opinions and perhaps pursue a different long-term objective. That doesn't stop us from still working with allies in on the continent. And Ukraine is a great demonstration of how critical that is. And what we're seeing as Rishi Sunak is a return of statecraft to number 10 after the, you know, the Boris party gate and the fiscal ill-discipline by Liz Truss. I fear, though, we've tested the trust of the British people almost to breaking point.
You mentioned allies on the continent. Are you referring to the European Union, the G7? Is there a particular group of nations that you're referring to in mind?
All those. We are, you know, one of the biggest economies in the world. We have one of the largest militaries. And this political appetite to understand the world around us and provide solutions. So people look to us and say, what are the Brits going to do? And then they may follow us. You know, we provide that perhaps understanding and be able to whisper in the ear of our closest security ally, the United States, to say, you know, don't do this, don't do that. Those F-16s, why don't you try, you know, giving them to Ukraine? And we were the first to provide those battle tanks to Ukraine as well. We led the way. Winnie provided, you know, half a dozen or so. Then other nations follow suit. It shows you what we can actually do. But if you are aggressive, if you are bombastic towards the continent, then they're just going to want to disengage. And that's, I'm afraid, what's happened over the last two or three years.
Do you ever worry that with all this information flowing around so freely, there is a tendency for it to suddenly end up in the wrong hands of the wrong people, say, in our enemies, say, in the hands of the Chinese as well? Do you ever worry that there could be risks to security in that way?
Yes, I mean, the world is certainly changing and changing fast indeed. And if we want to protect the things that are important to us, the freedoms that we have, then we need to recognize that there are bullies in this world. Authoritarianism is on the rise. And I think we've perhaps become complacent since the end of the Cold War in the 1990s, forgetting what we stand for, what we believe in, what we're willing to defend.
As a conservative yourself, as a One Nation conservative, what were your feelings around that Brexit vote around about 2016? Do you reckon we would have been better off staying within the European Union, or were you open to the idea of leaving the European Union at the time? What were you thinking?
I voted for Remain, but recognising that the direction of travel that the EU was going is becoming far too political. And it's now reached a threshold. It doesn't do the politics so much anymore. It focuses on the economics. And that, I think, is good. I would like to see us provide a better model of Brexit. The Norway model is something, oddly enough, being in the single market, something that Margaret Thatcher, going back to her, helped create. You know, this is not an un-Tory thing. And leading up to the referendum, Boris Johnson, Nigel Farage, all opted to go for Brexit but stay in the single market. We ended up, through different arguments, with a very hard form of Brexit, and that's damaging our economy. And I think we can actually do better than this. We have to review this. Let's be adults about this. Let's reconcile our relationship and have a stronger relationship with Brussels, but still honouring the Brexit result.
But then obviously Boris Johnson talked about his oven ready Brexit, and obviously sound bites are sound bites.
And that's why he's no longer Prime Minister.
Exactly, of course. Would you say that your politics differs very much from that of Boris Johnson, Tobias?
Not politics. I think what the ideology that binds us both together, it's the approach. Yeah, it's the strategy, how you communicate, and then what your vision is. You need to be very focused on where you want the country to go, how you want to be managed, and how we engage on the international scene. Because if Britain doesn't step forward, ask yourself who does. I'm pleased that Rishi Sunak is starting to rekindle that capability. The majority of backbenchers I speak to are now absolutely supportive of the Rishi Sunak, the new Prime Minister. We've got a budget which is finally able to tackle and bring inflation down. We've got a direction of travel that gives us a fighting chance at the next election. What has been frustrating is then to see groups, subgroups on the backbenches, this National Conservatives, for example, trying to rock the boat. You know, it's the Judean People's Front, if you like, to, you know, give it a name. Do we really think that a change of Prime Minister, a return to Boris Johnson, for example, is going to appeal to the electorate, another Prime Minister after we've, you know, on our third now? Absolutely wrong. Let's focus. Let's support the Prime Minister. Let's stay unified. Only then can we give ourselves a chance to win the next election.
Absolutely. But obviously, you do realise that there is a difficulty because with inflation currently being 8, 9, 10% at the moment, you do realise, I'm sure you're aware, you have a long way to go in order to kind of convince the electorate because of how difficult the situation, especially with the cost of living crisis, is at the moment.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, yes. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I was the first to stand up to Boris Johnson to say we'll not win the next election with him. We lost a couple of by-elections, actually, at that point. And then eventually enough colleagues joined with me and we removed. But then we had this curiosity of Liz Truss. You know, she made promises that were never going to survive contact with reality. And that's how she then wooed, you know, the base of our party to get elected. And that didn't last very long at all. It's been really, really bumpy. It's been unpleasant. And as I say, I'm really pleased that Rishi Sunak is now there. And you're right, it's going to be for the electorate to decide whether we've done enough, whether we brought inflation down.
If there was one thing that the Conservatives could do that would win over the electorate completely to get the Conservatives back in power in 2024, what would it be? The one thing that the Conservatives could do?
Well, they won't do it, but joining the single market, which, you know, goes back to our original discussion. It would kill the subject of Brexit. It would just put it to bed because you then wouldn't have this battle between, you know, Remainers and Brexiteers.
You mentioned something about the National Conservatism Conference, which happened a couple of weeks ago. I remember a lot of coverage at the time of said conference as well, and there were various different bits and pieces being claimed. Suella Braverman was there, Michael Gove was there, Miriam Cates was there at the National Conservatism Conference. And you speak about that in a kind of way that suggests that there were some parts that you were uncomfortable with. What were those elements that you disagreed with? Did you disagree with Suella Braverman's statements on immigration, Miriam Cates' statements on children and the family? What was your take on the National Conservatism Conference?
Well, firstly, what is nationalism? I mean, nationalism is different to patriotism. Patriotism is a love of your own. Nationalism is actually a hate of others. And I think it's very, very dangerous. Indeed. Even one of the speakers referred to German nationalism in a positive light. I was absolutely astonished that any Conservative would want to be associated with that. That's very, very dangerous indeed. We need to stand up to that. It should not be part of the Conservative ideology or the Conservative strategy to win the next general election. We should be distancing ourselves from organisations and funding such as that. And I was astonished that the Home Secretary would even go nowhere near it. She went there, we all realise why, because she's having an argument. She's already, I think, or certainly people who attended that conference, were actually assuming we're going to lose the next election, and they were having the debate about what happens next, where our party then goes, they're having it now. They've already given up.
Again, we've mentioned about the whole idea of the Conservatives wanting to get back into power. Do you not think that they too are also trying to find a way to get themselves popular with the electorate again in time for 2024?
Sorry, which bit of the electorate is a right-wing organisation going to appeal to? They're not the general population. The general population of Britain is pretty moderate, perhaps conservative with a small c, and wants sensible grown-up politics. That's where Rishi Sunak is now returning to. Jeremy Corbyn was never going to win. He went to the extreme of his party. Ian Duncan Smith was never going to win. He went to the extreme of his party, as did Liz Truss as well. Tony Blair, he looked like a Tory. And he needed John Prescott, you know, the old bruiser, to remind everybody, oh yeah, he is in the Labour Party. He's got the unions behind him. And that's what Britain then liked.
Tony Blair looking like a Tory, for someone who's a very staunch Labour politician, that's quite the statement from you, Tobias.
When you go to your extreme, then there's absolutely no chance of winning, because you just appeal to your own base. It took David Cameron, who was then more centre ground, to then look like we can then win the election again.
Absolutely. And obviously with politics, it can be a broad church. You mentioned right at the very start, the Conservative has a broad spectrum of different opinions as well. And I'm guessing with the MPs, every MP also has a broad spectrum of musical opinions as well. And one thing that I was thinking about, Tobias, to ask you was, which MPs would you say your musical tastes are most like?
It's a good question, because we tend to spend a lot of time with each other talking about politics. And I think perhaps we should spend more time on podcasts like yourselves talking not about politics, but about these other things. I know a lot of my colleagues like Duran Duran. And I know that because the United States Embassy, the embassy in London, has a 4th of July concert celebrations. And Duran Duran, a few years ago, was back on stage. All of us who are in our sort of 40s and 50s, we were bopping away. And I was astonished to see colleagues such as Robert Buckland and Simon Hoare and all these other characters as well, Caroline Noakes, all dancing away. Even Philip Hammond, if you remember him, all dancing away. And clearly there was a unity outside of politics. Under the music of Duran Duran. It was, you know, Wild Boys. That was it. That's what it was all about. The artist, I mean, it sounds a bit cliche just because he is so big, but the artist that I sort of grew up with was Elton John. I mean, he's such lovely listening music. And often, I mean, nowadays, everybody's got their podcasts and bits and pieces. When I was growing up, you had to buy the record, you know, and then you had to record it on those little... you know, cassettes, those tapes and things like that. It was a bit of an effort to make it all happen. I had a Walkman. Do you remember Walkmans? You're too young to remember that. And then, so it certainly was, my mixtapes always had some Elton John on there. It was very relaxing music. I've seen him in concert, but everybody can relate to some of his music. Yellow Brick Road was one of my favorites. And he very much... Dire Straits was another one that I really enjoyed listening to, sort of background, very sort of easy listening and so forth. So, and The Police is the other one that I grew up with too. So these were some of the big bands in those days. It's almost like there's too many bands today, to build. You have to sort of hunt for it to see one sort of jump out at you. But they were the big ones that stayed with me, and I really enjoy listening to now. I was a Boy Scout working on a summer camp in Germany. We went to the American base, a military base there, where they had a big selection of tapes and bits and pieces. And I played it, because it was only one. I then played it again and again and again, because I didn't have much of a variation in my... And I had one of these massive beat boxes, you know, with the huge speakers, the cassette player in the center. And I played Billy Joel, Uptown Girl, it was one of them. The other one was Blondie, Call Me Atomic. It was, there's another album there, which I always love as well.
Absolutely. And Billy Joel, Blondie, all absolute legends in the game. Really, really good artists that you've picked out for us, Tobias. And as we wrap up our session today, we're going to take it from the 80s and the 90s. We're going to bring it up to date. And we've got a feature for you, Tobias, as we wrap up. And we just want to see what your musical tastes are like right now with a couple of tracks that are currently out at the moment. So we want to see how you're feeling with these tracks today in a feature that we call Trash or Stash. And the rule is very simple. We've got a series of clips for you to listen to of songs that are popular at the moment. And we just want to see, would you stash this in your playlist? Would you have this on repeat as you're going about your day-to-day business? Or would you trash it? Would you throw it away? Would you get rid of it? You'd never want to hear it again and you'd leave it as it is. Right, so we've got four tracks at the moment. We're just going to see what you think of them, whether you would like to stash them or whether you'd like to trash them. We are going to start with a former UK number one. It was number one for quite some time here in the UK earlier on this year. I am, of course, talking about Miley Cyrus and Flowers. Let's take a little listen to this. Started to cry, but then remembered I can buy myself flowers. Write my name in the sand. Talk to myself for hours. Say things you don't. So that is Miley Cyrus and Flowers. Tobias Elwood, would you trash that or would you stash that in your playlist?
See, I don't know what's coming next. So I don't know whether I quite like that. I'm hoping that there's going to be some real thumpers next. So I'm afraid I'm going to be optimistic that this is going to ratchet up. So it's a nice song. It's a nice song. So I don't know where you're going to go with this. So I'm going to trash this in thinking that you're going to really move this up another couple of notches.
Okay, that's an interesting answer. Would it change your mind if I was to tell you that Dolly Parton was the godmother of Miley Cyrus? And could you hear a little bit of Dolly Parton in there?
I could hear the influence, absolutely. And really interesting, because it's when you learn about these, a little bit more about the artists and their own influences, I enjoy that, because you then understand where they're coming from in the lyrics as well, and what moves them too. I'm still on the trash side. I can see you guys really love this, but maybe it shows my distance. I should say that when I talked with my kids last night about coming onto this show, they were really hesitant that I should go anywhere near you guys, just because how out of touch I am with the very modern stuff, if you like, with the sort of, you know, what gets played on Radio 1 right now.
Of course. So, a very interesting trash for Tobias Elwood in Flowers by Miley Cyrus. It does get better, I do promise you that, my good friend. And we move on to our second track now. It's by an up-and-coming artist by the name of Katie Baser. She's really making her way in the music scene right now from Brighton. She's been on tour recently, and she was also at Radio 1's Big Weekend in Dundee just this past weekend at the time of recording. And the next clip that we're going to listen to for you to stash or trash in your playlist, Tobias Elwood, X and Y. Let's take a listen. You're not my ex, you're just my Y. Like, why'd you mess up my whole life? 'Cause I'm a 10 and you're a 5. You're not my ex, you're just my Y. I invested in you like crypto.
We're just getting going on that one, weren't we? I think it's a shame. I know time prevents us from really getting it. I would stash that one. I think things that get me out of my seat. You know, that's the sort of music I like, and I think that's gonna. I look forward to hearing more from her. Actually, I think the way you guys sort of built her up, I absolutely agree. I think she's got a bright future. So, I would certainly stash that one.
Very nice, very good. That is Stash from Tobias Elwood for X and Y by Katie Baser. And we now moved on to our next track. Once again, up-and-coming girl band by the name of Flo. They've got a couple of good tracks out at the moment, and this is one of them, Losing You. Tobias Elwood, would you trash or would you stash this in your playlist? Yeah. You don't know what loyal is. Yeah. I'm so done with this. You're only giving 10%. Always lift you up and never let you down. But like
Yeah, it's it's tough because you got to, you know, one or the other. It's very binary here, isn't it? If you ask me to store this away for, well, like on a desert island, and I have to listen to this over and over again, I think I'll end up more time in the water than listening to that one. So I probably trash that one, I'm afraid.
All right, that is a trash from Tobias Elwood. Unfortunately, Flo losing you, and he was losing the feels for that song. Unfortunately, that was not in his corner. That wasn't the caliber for Tobias Elwood. But, Tobias, you mentioned how you liked tracks that really get you up out of your seat. You like the tracks that really motivate you, that really get you going. This one will definitely do it. Take a listen to this, Tobias Elwood.
Yeah, I like that, and I can see myself moving around to that one. Again, you can hear the lyrics. It's not too, you know, pungent in that sense. And good jingle. I really like that.
Lovely stuff. Amazing. And that is a stash, of course, the amazing Harry Styles, As It Was. And that, my good friend Tobias Elwood, that is Trash or Stash. Thanks very much for playing.
Do you know what you need to do, Tobias? You need to go and tell your kids that you've added Harry Styles to your playlist.
Right.
That will just be my
street cred. My street cred will then go up.
It will just level up so many levels.
Can I say, if you asked any of these artists whether they would keep any of my speeches, I'm sure they would like trash every single one of them. So it works both ways. Let's make that clear.
Indeed it does. Well, as we wrap up today's session, I'd just like to say, Tobias Elwood, it has been an absolute pleasure and a joy to have you on our podcast today. You've been really good with us, and we've really enjoyed speaking to you today, learning all about your musical history and, of course, about the politics as well, of which you are very much a part of in the current day. Tobias Elwood, it's been a pleasure and a joy. Thank you so much for appearing on our podcast today. Thank you very much.
It really has been a pleasure, and a walk down memory lane as well. And thank you for making me feel so welcome, because I did feel a bit of intimidation in coming on to your show.
But no worries.
It's been a delight, and I'll encourage my colleagues to join you as well. So,
lovely stuff. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, guys and gals, that, of course, was the Conservative MP for Bournemouth East, Tobias Elwood.